Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and happy Libra season, and happy Libra new moon. Guys, let's just be real here. Okay, so if you listen to the How to Develop Your Spiritual Practice episode a couple moons ago, you know, I gave the mind, the body, the spirit, we got to balance those all in our spiritual practices. Okay, here, let me just give you a real life example of me trying to do that today and like failing. Not quite. It wasn't a huge fail, but I did go to nature this morning. So for me, that was almost like mind, body, and spirit in a way. I was kind of combining. So I went to nature, took a walk, channeled all of the stuff that we're going to talk about, you know, talked to spirit for a while. You know, it kind of started to rain in the forest, and I said, okay, all right, I'm going to go home now, and it's perfect. It's raining. I'm going to record my podcast now, and of course, when I sit down, I meet a lot of resistance and a lot of inner critic stuff, and that kind of took over, and then I went to Taco Bell, and I went to Target for like an hour and spent money that I didn't need to be spending. And now we're back. So that was Mal's spiritual day. So I just want you guys to know, always know that I'm struggling right along with you. You know, I'm giving you the ideas, I'm giving you the messages, but there are days when I don't follow my own advice. There are days when I struggle with my spiritual practice, and if I even do one thing, like a positive affirmation, you know, that's better than nothing. So we have to remember that when we're trying to transition into, into a practice, a daily practice that works for us. And I think that's kind of the key to Libra season too, you know, not to be too cliche, but Libra is about balance. It's those balancing scales. So we're kind of balancing, like, you know, we go out in nature, but then we go to Taco Bell. That was just today though, but you know, I'm having a weird day, and but the messages that I was getting this morning in the forest and when I was on my nature walk were really interesting, so I'm kind of excited to talk. Now, one of the things I wanted to say was for this sort of Libra season / Libra new moon sermon / rambles, you know, we tend to like really stereotype Libra in a certain way, just like we stereotype Virgo for being, you know, a clean freak, and just like we stereotype let's say Scorpio for being the most sexual sign. You know, these stereotypes, they're not getting to the root of what the sign really means, right? So when we stereotype Libra as being about, you know, our relationships, romantic lives, I don't know. I'm kind of like, well, here's the thing, like, Libras aren't any more concerned with love than anybody else, in my opinion. I feel like we all want to find love to some extent. And if we do have love, we want to maintain it in some way, you know, so that I feel like that's not just a Libra thing. I think the root of Libra is about relationships, but it's not just about our relationships to others. It's about our relationship to ourselves. And although maybe some witchy books or some, you know, critical thinking or whatever, you might think, oh, you know, it's the new moon in Libra, it's time to do some love magic. It's time to, you know, bring in who I want and, you know, manifest a partner or whatnot. Guys, you know, you can do that anytime. You don't have to do that just in Libra season A. And B, I'm not really feeling that for this new moon. Now, if you are, that's completely fine. Remember, your phone number to God does not have, you know, any weaker reception than my own phone line to God. So we're all on the same playing field. So if your intuition is telling you that is what you are supposed to do during this new moon in Libra, that's the sort of ritual you're wanting to do. You're wanting to do a love ritual of some sort, completely fine. Me, you know, my guides are sort of telling me that this new moon is going to be a wonderful time to reconnect with our higher self. And I think it's actually very important that we do that, because what we don't realize, and you know, I hate to be like a doomsday astrologer, but in general, I think I've had a very hard year, and I think a lot of people have. And 2019 had some rough astrology stuff going on, and I think 2018, remember 2018 when it was around this time in 2018 and we all were saying, oh man, I want these next 3 months to fly so this year can just be over with and we can get to 2019 and I can have a fresh start. Okay, we're in 2019. For me, it even got harder. Like, it didn't get much better, it got harder. We thought 2019 was going to be sort of a refresh and rejuvenated kind of feeling. It wasn't. It presented some more spiritual and soul challenges. And now, you know, this new moon in Libra, we're actually being led into 2020 and the challenges that lie ahead in 2020. I'm sure you've heard other astrologers talk about the Pluto-Saturn conjunction that's happening in January 2020. There's some other tough astrological things happening in that year as well. So again, I don't say this to be the doomsday astrologer and be like, dun, 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 start worrying, you know, start getting scared about, you know, what the astrology holds for the rest of the year and in 2020. But really, you know, we have to look at this long term. We have to see, I think, the duration of 2018, 2019, 2020 as 3 years, I think, of, I'm almost hearing like that, it kind of like a dark night of the soul. I know it's kind of a long time to have a dark night of a soul, but in a way, that's kind of the vibe that these 3 years are giving me. And finally, we get to the new moon in Libra on Saturday, September 28th, and we're being reminded that within all of these challenges and within like the existential frustration, the spiritual frustration, the times we've felt blocked, the times we haven't known which way to go, the times where it's been really, really hard to let go, the times where we felt resistance, this new moon in Libra tells us you need to connect to your higher self. Well, you don't need to do anything, but that was really what my guides were giving me. It is a time to connect to the higher self. And by the way, what do I mean by the higher self? What am I even talking about? You know, there's a version of us, you know, in the astral plane. I think it kind of represents our soul, that I call the higher self, and other people call it the higher self too. It might be called different things by different people. For me, it's sort of the higher self. I think some people interpret the higher self as spirit guides, spirit guides being like parts of your higher self. I also think our ancestors and universal force are parts of our higher selves. Actually, I'm not a big spirit guide kind of gal. It's not to say I don't believe in spirit guides, but I would say in my experience, people are very concerned with who's my spirit guide? How do I find them? What is their name? What do they look like? And for me, it doesn't really matter. at least in my own reality. I know some other people who consider themselves intuits or psychics, they know their spirit guide's name and they know who they are and la 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 la. Me, I'm kind of like, you know, I feel the guides, but what I really feel more than anything is the presence of my higher self. Okay, so if you have been kind of wanting to connect to that higher self, that sort of all-knowing part of you, the part of you that knows the past, present, and future, the part of you that really never feels lost because they know exactly where they're going and they know exactly why they came to Earth and what they're here to do. If you're wanting to connect more to that, I can give you guys a little bit of a visualization. So this isn't quite a meditation. I would say it's more of a visualization, but if you are driving, please be wary of doing this. Maybe do it once you're parked or whatnot. And this is sort of like, you know, it takes less than 5 minutes. This is something that I do pretty often, you know, before a tarot reading or just when I get up in the morning. Basically, I'll take a deep breath in through the nostrils, inhaling white light through the top of my head into the crown chakra, and exhaling black smoke, sending away any inklings of self-doubt, self-abuse, self-criticism, and replacing it with that white light from divine source that's filled with love and acceptance. And I'm going to do that a couple times. And I let my imagination wander, and I'm going to take us into a forest. And I want you to imagine that you are walking in a beautiful autumn forest. The leaves are crunching beneath your feet. Bark is sort of peeling off of these big, beautiful trees that are surrounding you. The air is crisp and you feel completely safe. You also feel a sense that you are meeting someone in this forest, but you're not entirely sure who it is. But nevertheless, you're excited. You have a feeling that you're just going to run into them. And that's exactly what happens. Your feet are crunching on the leaves, and suddenly in the distance, something catches your eye. You notice that someone is walking towards you. And as they get closer and closer, you realize that this person looks familiar. And they're walking, walking, walking. And suddenly you realize why they look familiar. It's because they look almost exactly like you. You realize this is your higher self. And I want you to notice what is different about them. Why didn't you recognize yourself at first? Was it because your higher self walks with confidence and happiness and self-love? You didn't quite recognize yourself doing that. What is your higher self wearing? Are they in a sweater? Are they in a little black dress? Are they in all white? Are they wearing any shoes? Are they carrying anything with them? Look down at their hand. What are they holding? Maybe they're holding a paintbrush. Maybe they're holding a deck of tarot cards. Maybe they're holding a certain crystal that means something to you. And you notice that you and this person, because you're the same, in order to communicate, neither of you have to open your mouths to verbally communicate. you can look at each other and know exactly what each other is thinking. I want you to look at your higher self in the eye and absorb what they are telling you at this time, any messages that you are receiving from them. And if your higher self has anything to give you at this time, maybe they want to give you that paintbrush in their hand. Maybe they're going to give you that crystal that they were holding. Or maybe not. And you both decide to part ways, but as you're walking away, you know that you're never fully parted from them because you are the same entity. So I do feel like, you know, going into Libra season, finishing up the rest of 2019, going into 2020, it's really important that we continue to connect with that higher self, that higher knowing, the knowing that goes beyond our anxiety, our monkey mind. Any shame, any guilt, any depression, any anxiety. Those are things that are coming from our human experience. We need to make sure we're also connecting to the soul experience, right? And that's through that higher self. And I think that, you know, this new moon in Libra, if you're looking to do a ritual, I think it would be really nice to sort of build a little altar for your higher self, you know, and in a way, building an altar for your higher self is like building an altar for you. It's as if you were a god or you were a goddess. You're going to have to ask, you know, what is my favorite flower, or what would I like to display on my altar dedicated to my higher self? Is it a poem that you wrote? Is it a favorite flower? Is it a favorite stone? Do you want to write yourself a letter? Do you want to light a candle for yourself that's dedicated to self-love and self-acceptance? Anything along those lines, I'll let you guys kind of interpret it as you want to. But I think something that has to do with honoring the higher self, whether that be a ritual, anything that you interpret that as, you know, trust your gut and do it. That's how I kind of feel about like rituals and practicing witchcraft and even like channeling messages and sharing with you guys. Take my channeled message, and if you resonate, make it your own, okay? Believe everything I say and believe nothing I say. Once I had a psychic tell me that, and I was like, that's perfect. I'm going to start using that, because take what resonates and leave the rest. Now, as for the astrology surrounding the new moon in Libra, the moon and the sun will conjunct at 5 degrees Libra. And what I find interesting is that the moon and the sun, they make a quincunx to Uranus, which will be at 5 degrees Taurus. Now, my astrology teacher, Dave, Dave, he's pretty interested in this aspect, the quincunx. And we consider the quincunx a sort of mid-range aspect. What do I mean by that? Well, if you have been listening for a while, you may have learned from me or from reading an astrology book or whatever it may be, there is something called a major aspect, the major aspects in your chart. So those would be the conjunctions, the oppositions, the squares, and the trines, okay? So those are all the major aspects. The mid-range aspects, there's a lot of them, but a common mid-range aspect that you may have heard of is a sextile. Granted, some astrologers will consider that a major aspect. For me, and the way I've been taught that the sextile is more of a mid-range, and I've also seen that to be true in astrological readings as well. So, you know, that might be something that you're familiar with. Now, we don't normally talk about a quincunx, though. What does a quincunx really mean? Well, actually, when you get into more medical astrology, which, by the way, I literally have no idea how medical astrology really works, but my astrology teacher, Dave, he is pretty good at medical astrology, but I would never call myself a medical astrologer, so please never come to me for a medical astrology reading as of now. In medical astrology, the quincunx is very important. These are what we call a health aspect. But, you know, in our natal chart, they can have something to do with our health and our well-being. In the transiting sky, typically a quincunx, the main phrase that most people associate a quincunx with is needing adjustment. So the fact that the moon, our emotions, and the sun, our identity, are conjunct in Libra, quincunxing Uranus in Taurus, which Uranus, planet of freedom, planet of revolution, planet of higher thinking, something needs adjustment in the way our minds are working. And I think it could very well be this connection with our higher selves. I also think if we kind of cut it in half, sort of, you know, the moon quincunx Uranus could mean that we need to free our minds in some way. If there's something that hasn't been working for you in the realm of mental health, maybe it's time to sort of ask spirit or ask yourself, you know, is there another way? Maybe the type of therapy you're in isn't working for you. Maybe you're looking for more of a holistic plan to manage your mental health. Maybe in general, you've been wanting to go to therapy because you're feeling like maybe every day is hard. You don't want to feel like every day needs to be full of depression and sadness and anxiety. You're seeking help. That could definitely be the moon quincunxing Uranus. Or in general, it doesn't need to be about our mental health. It could be about our emotional health. There could be something that we've bottled up inside lately that we need to let out. Our emotions are seeking freedom in some way. But guess what? How many times do we keep our emotions in prison? How many times are we not allowing ourselves to see the full picture? I think the monkey mind wants to tell us the same story over and over and over and over and over again. But that moon quincunx Uranus during the new moon, I think it's really special. I think it's totally an opportunity to see, finally, you know, overcome almost that monkey mind, even if it's for a few minutes, and find clarity about how to move forward and how to work towards freeing the mind in a healthy and productive way. When we face our demons, and when we go to therapy, or when we talk to a healer, or whatever it may be, although it's difficult, and although we don't feel better right away, what we're really doing is we're setting up a foundation for long-term rewiring the way we're thinking, and that ultimately leads to the ultimate freedom, right? Which is mental freedom. You know, the things that used to bother us last year right now may not bother us anymore. The things that are bothering us right now don't have to be bothering us as significantly a year from now, but that requires us to work on that in some way, commit to healing ourselves in some way. And I also think with the sun quincunxing Uranus, you know, we're also focusing in on our identities sort of needing adjustment in some way. What do I mean by this? You know, it could be you need to free yourself from some sort of story about what you had to be. This could be a really good aspect to sort of let go anything that isn't working anymore. Maybe honoring an old part of you that wanted to be something, but now that you're growing older and wiser, you realize, oh gosh, you know, the only reason I wanted to be that was to please my parents, or was to go along with what society wanted from me. I realized that, you know, going forth, my identity needs adjustment because something just doesn't feel like me anymore. And I think all new moons and all full moons can always have something to do with letting go, right? We're constantly being bombarded with this letting go, letting go, letting go sort of, you know, stuff. And you guys know that makes me mad. Not mad, but it's because I personally really struggle with letting go. You know, if you speak astrology, I've got my moon squared Pluto, so that definitely is a I have trouble letting go aspect. But I think the quincunx, it's not necessarily suggesting let go, but it's suggesting make an adjustment that sets you up to let go, if that makes sense. And, you know, besides these quincunxes with Uranus, which, again, I know I said didn't necessarily have to do with, like, our personal health, but I think collective, there's something going on with, like, health, mental health, and the way we, go about our mental health and the way we think about mental health. And I mean, we've talked about like the stigmas of going to therapy, or the stigma behind, you know, diagnoses and all of this stuff for a really long time. But for some reason, I feel like it really hasn't changed all that much. Like you still, you know, hear people saying like, oh, I'm going to my therapist's office, and we kind of feel like, oh, like we kind of feel bad for them, or we think like, oh, what's wrong, or what's up, or, you know, are you okay? And really, maybe it's just normal. Can we normalize it? That's kind of what I'm feeling with this moon in a weird way, on a very human level, but in a spiritual level, you know, a higher level, we need to adjust, I think, the way we go about both our mental and emotional health. Moon and sun, the new moon, they will also kind of loosely oppose Chiron. So I think this is a healing aspect. It could be, you know, in oppositions, they could be coming from coming internally, but they could also be coming at us from the external world, if that makes sense. So, you know, it could be that this new moon is presenting us with an opportunity for healing, but it could be in the form of someone triggering us. It could be in the form of, you know, let's say having to say no to someone who really wants you to participate in their project, and you hold a lot of shame around turning things down. You hold a lot of shame around telling people no. Something like that might come up around the new moon, so you can actually say no and sit with the shame that is brought up. But know that, you know, going forth, the no's get easier. And also, you know, I think it's kind of beautiful that during this new moon as well, Venus is sextiling Jupiter. Another mid-range aspect. I do think that, you know, in connecting to our higher selves, you know, what's the number one way to connect to our higher self? Making art. you know, making our art, creating with spirit. And that Venus sextiling Jupiter, it does kind of read to me in a way of like, let's make our art, let's connect to God through our creations. I talked a lot about that in my Artist Way podcast. So if you are a blocked artist, or an artist who's been feeling stagnant or unable to create, I'll refer you to that episode. that Venus sextile Jupiter, they're like, you know, how can you connect to spirit? You know, put down the tarot cards, put down the astrology, put down Mal's podcast for a sec. Can you connect in a different way? Can art be a mode of divination? Can writing be a mode of divination? That's really what that aspect is giving me. So overall, I think this is a time of growth, but also remember that this new moon in Libra, it's sort of preparing us for death. Not in a bad way, in a really good way. But, you know, the things, you know, in making these connections with our higher selves now, in sort of slowly bringing back our art into our lives, in slowly bringing back creativity into our lives, we're kind of preparing for, you know, what's to come, not only in October and the rest of 2019, but also what's to come in 2020. And I also keep having to remind myself too that, you know, I do catch myself saying like, God, can this year be over with? My God, like, it's just been like, over and over and over, like, there's been so much, you know, so many shifts and so many challenges and so much resistance. But then I think like, okay, well, 2020, like, man, like, that's gonna be a big one, you know, so there's no rush to get into that. I think we should just finish this year out as well as we can, for doing the best that we can with the lessons that we've learned in general. Now, it was interesting. I did this thing where I didn't shuffle the cards, but I did just channel them, and I asked Spirit, I was like, can you give me some cards that have to do with the Libra season and Libra new moon and what we're going to be experiencing kind of even going into October. And the cards that I saw the Justice card, which makes sense because it's Libra season, it's the card of Libra. I saw the Hanged Man, I saw the Six of Swords, and then I also saw the Queen of Cups. So I was thinking a little bit deeper into justice, and it's funny, I was reading at this kind of like little event at my yoga studio the other day, and I did have a bunch of readings, and I swear I was shuffling the cards really well. The Justice card keeps popping out for like every single person. I'm like, like when the Justice card is one of those cards when it comes out, and even me, I'm like, oh fuck, like what is this now? Like I don't know what about the Justice card that like gets me really confused, but it does in readings. And I have trouble even like intellectualizing what the Justice card really, really does mean. So typically when it does come out in a reading, I just channel directly from Spirit, and I don't even worry about what, you know, my tarot book would say about justice, just because there's never really been a meaning for justice that really, really clicked. And I do want to touch on that because I think that it's a very esoteric card. you know, we see this, if we're looking at the Rider-Waite, we see that this person, I think they're mostly an androgynous figure. You know, they're sitting in between two pillars, just as the High Priestess sits in between two pillars. So we know this person is of spirit. We know this person has a very close relationship with the divine, And they're sort of straddling the portal between two worlds. But they're also holding the scale. And they're holding the sword of truth. They're wearing red. They kind of look regal. They have a crown. We're really not sure what's going on in the Justice card. Our tarot books tell us this is sort of about court cases or, you know, having to make a decision, which I will say sometimes this card does come up for it's time to make a decision. But then, you know, when the Justice card, it finally clicked with me a couple days ago when it was Mabon. If you celebrate the pagan holiday of Mabon, which is a harvest holiday that happens at the fall equinox, and it's a celebration of harvest, right? Now, why are the scales associated with Libra? Libra's the only zodiac sign that doesn't have a person or an animal. It just has scales. It just has an object. So what's so special about these scales? Well, in mythology, the scales that Libra, the balancing scales, represent like the souls being weighed in the underworld and, you know, did you do your purpose and things like that. In the human realm, the weighing scales, they were actually used to weigh crops. And that relates to Virgo, right? Because Virgo is also another harvest goddess. But Libra is sort of also about harvest, but at this point in the year, we're weighing our crops. It's kind of like everything's already grown, and we know now if we grew enough food to make it through winter, right? So going back to the Justice card, with that in mind, you know, I think we get this card when it's sort of like the universe is kind of like, well, it is what it is. You manifested what you manifested, and some of that was in alignment, and some of that's not in alignment, and that's okay. And now we're going to have to go forward, because even if you don't like what you manifested, it's still there. You know, if you grew a pumpkin and you don't like how it looks, you can't put it back in the ground. I mean, technically you could bury it and it would probably decompose and then grow a new pumpkin next year, but that's going to take a year, right? Like, we can't rewind the growth process. Once something has grown, it's grown. And that's okay. And I think the Justice card comes up to kind of say, like, everything in front of us is reality. And we can try to, you know, think things like, what if, or, oh, I should have done this, or the woulda, shoulda, couldas. But no. The Justice card is like, no, stay in reality right now. What is the reality of the situation? Justice card also is the middle of the major arcanas, right? We're in the middle way. It's sort of the let's go forward and not go back, but at the same time, one side of the scale is the past and the other side of the scale is the future. And we're sitting in the present moment, kind of wondering what will all become of this. So I think that is my connection to the Justice card right now. And I think we all might be faced with that sort of feeling with the year of 2019 in general. I know I am, in the sense of, like, this whole year, like, manifesting and cultivating and bringing in things. And, you know, I think there was a point in the year where I brought in maybe too much and I burnt myself out. And now the Justice card's coming to me to kind of say, you know what, Mal, it is what it is. You burnt yourself out. You did too much. You almost, like, over manifested. And now you got to take a break, and that's okay. You know, things will happen, the wheel will turn again, but right now, this is your reality. Now, the other card that came to me was, like I said, the Hanged Man. And what Spirit wanted to say about the Hanged Man was, it's funny, because, you know, this keeps coming up for me, resistance, you know, who wants to be hanging one foot by a tree? That doesn't look comfortable. There's something in our bodies, our human meat suits, that really hates being uncomfortable. Even if we have an itch, think of when you're trying to meditate and there's like this little itch on like your back and you gotta move, and even that minuscule uncomfortability becomes bigger and bigger and bigger if we kind of ignore it. And there's just something in our innate nature that just wants to be comfortable. When we're cold, we want to be warmer. When we're sweating, we want air conditioning. Actually, there's like this Buddhist saying from this book that I was reading called Zen Koans, and a Koan, K-O-A-N-S. They're like kind of little Buddhist paradoxes, and there's a Zen Koan that says, if you're hot, be hot, if you're cold, be cold. And that is what the Hangman is telling us. But it does require a certain level of uncomfortability. And I think we're really uncomfortable in the Hanged Man. And there's a lot of resistance to being uncomfortable in the Hanged Man, just like there's a lot of resistance when we're walking our path. And actually, I was just talking to someone the other day, someone who's taking my tarot class. And she was saying that, you know, she's kind of working a job right now that she's not very happy with. But the reason she's working that job is so she can kind of save money to do something that she really, really wants to do. And this is after she's completely already like done a whole career, decided it didn't make her happy, quit that, and now is in a new job that still isn't quite right, but this new job does allow her the time to focus on her dream. And, but she was telling me, you know, after tarot class last night, she was telling me that it's so hard for her to, you know, go into this job because she just hates it with a passion. But she knows that it's allowing her to do all these things that are aligning herself long term with her dream. And she's like, you know, it's funny because I have so much resistance to doing it. But once I'm there, I'm like, okay, this isn't that bad. Like, I can do this. It's fine. Like, it's not that bad. It's just the lead up. And then I'm hearing in my ear from Spirit that, yes, she is facing resistance on one level, on a very surface level with the work that she's doing. But she was also facing some resistance. She didn't realize, but she's facing resistance because there's a part of her that knows that she's now walking her higher path, because she's walking towards something that she really loves and she's really passionate about. And that actually was also causing her resistance. And she was kind of like, oh yeah, you're probably right. And I never thought about it that way. And how many times do we do that, though? Like, I actually think that, you know, there's no such thing as like an easy route. And I actually think there's two types of resistance. There's like bad resistance, where like we're actually doing something that we hate and that's bad for us and that creates toxicity in our lives and doesn't feel in alignment. We just hate our lives and we have so much resistance to doing it that we just have to quit it. But then there's a different kind of resistance where you're actually doing things that you are passionate about, and you're doing things that are going to lead you to the thing that you're passionate about. That actually creates more resistance, right? And I think sometimes the Hangman reminds us of that resistance we feel, not when we're on the wrong path, but when we're on the right path. And there are times when we're on, and not to give that whole illusion that there is a right or wrong path, because I'm just, but go with the metaphor, but just for the record here, I think there's a million different paths to the same destination. So, but, you know, we do really face we still face resistance when we're doing the right thing that is in alignment for us. Know that. And we can face the most resistance when we're doing that, okay? The other thing that I wanted to say was I wanted to make a comment about the Six of Swords. This is the other card that Spirit gave me. So we have the Justice card. Let's review. We have the Justice card. So we're kind of in this phase. You know, it is what it is. We have what we have in front of us. You know, some manifestations, some flowers that grew are okay. Some others are rotten. That's okay. We just have to move forward with what we have. We're also in the Hanged Man, which is we're facing resistance in some way, and we have to figure out how to sort of keep going and tell ourselves that uncomfortability is okay when our whole body screams over a little itch. And then we arrive at the Six of Swords. The Six of Swords, Spirit gave me this weird thing. They were like time traveling. And I was like, huh, that's so weird, because the Six of Swords I usually see as, you know, arriving to a new mindset. We're shifting a way we've been thinking, a negative thought pattern. We're replacing a negative thought pattern with a positive affirmation in some way. We're just leaving an old way of thinking that's no longer serving. Which could be true, but with the whole time traveling thing, I thought it was interesting that Spirit would have said that because, you know, going back to the astrology, like we know that 2018, 2019, 2020 are just going to be hard years. They're going to be years of huge death and rebirth and transformation for the collective. So with that time traveling thing, I almost feel like the Six of Swords is asking us, you know, we look at our lives right now, but can we look at our lives? Can we zoom out a little bit? And if we continue on this path and we fight through the resistance, can we see that, you know, if we traveled 10 years in the future, can we see that it was worth it? In some way. Like I was kind of thinking that, you know, and there's no guarantees, right? But like I started doing the psychic work, you know, I've been doing it for about a year now, right? 24 years old. I have copious amounts of resistance, fear. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've had a lot of, you know, just self-doubt, you know, sweating out of my pores. And, but, you know, Spirit asked me, they were like, okay, you're doing this for a year, but even by the time I'm 30, that's what, 6 years from now? Then I'll already have 6 years of psychic work under my belt. And by the time I'm 30, you know, so right now the journey seems kind of rough. In some way, like I'm just really not sure how it's all gonna work out. But putting into perspective, like what could this bring me if I keep fighting and if I keep going, if I keep moving, even though the resistance is strong. So I want you to think about that too in your own life. And finally, the last card that Spirit gave me was the Queen of Cups. And the Queen of Cups is the card of emotional intelligence. And I think this is going back to that moon and sun quincunxing Uranus too on the new moon. That emotional intelligence, like, have I been suffering in silence? Like, have I not been taking care of my mental health in the way that I should? Have I been meaning to talk to someone about something, but I haven't been able to be vulnerable? Emotional intelligence doesn't mean that we are in control of our emotions all the time. It doesn't mean that, you know, we don't cry to a friend. It doesn't mean that we don't cry in Target, you know, on a Thursday night. You know, like emotional intelligence has nothing to do with withholding our emotions. Emotional intelligence means that you know that, you know, in order for you to function in the week, you need to spend an hour with your therapist every week crying it out or whatever. Emotional intelligence is knowing that you need to talk to someone because you feel yourself on a downward slope and you're kind of reaching a level of depression or anxiety that you know is a little bit dangerous for you. Something like that with the Queen of Cups could be coming up. And so those are kind of the messages through the tarot that have to do with the Libra season, Libra new moon. And for the crystal, because I've been doing this, I felt like the crystal for this Libra new moon was tektite. And tektite, it kind of looks like it's like a black stone, and it kind of looks like a piece of coal. And it's known for helping us with astral travel and astral projection. And for me, I do think it's a good stone for connecting to the higher self. And by the way, our god and our goddess for this new moon, I'm not calling in a specific god or goddess. It's just the higher self. Okay, so again, this new moon's all about us connecting with our higher self, doing a ritual for our higher self. And lastly, I'm gonna have to flip through my journal. For my tarot readers out there, I made you guys a higher self tarot spread. So the first card is, and I'll put this in the show notes, but the first card is my current relationship to my higher self. The second card would be reasons for disconnecting, if any. The third card would be how to improve my relationship to my higher self. And the fourth card would be anything my higher self wants to tell me right now. Okay? Okay, guys, that's kind of the Libra season overview. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we got some fun astrology questions, and I'm also going to sort of dissect a few other charts too, so hang in there. Okay, guys, I am back, and I have a couple astrology questions from some listeners. So for my fellow astrology students out there, hopefully this helps you in some way. It really, the one way we really, really take our astrology practice to the next level is looking at other people's charts. And besides our own, I think it's mostly important to, you know, learn our own chart at first, and but we can learn a lot also by you know, looking at other people's charts and learning from that too. So, you know, listen along and see if you can also come up with your own interpretations as well for these questions, or use your own intuition too as I'm going through these. So question number one, I have a Mars in Pisces, and it's a placement I struggle with, mostly because I don't identify with it at all. I don't have a willow, calm, or submissive nature of a Pisces Mars that every astro website I read says. I definitely feel more like an Aries Mars in that respect. I'm wondering, is it because my Mars is at 28 degrees? I notice it also trines my ascendant and sextiles my sun, but I'm not very well versed in aspects. I highly appreciate any insight you have. Okay. And I'm going to call you Mars in Pisces. So Mars in Pisces, I was looking at your chart, and you're correct in the sense that, yes, your Mars is at 28 degrees Pisces, and it's also sitting in the fourth house. And I was looking, and although your Mars does sextile your Saturn actually your Saturn. Besides that, that's pretty much the only aspect your Mars makes in the entire chart. You did mention that you thought your Mars trines your ascendant. I am looking and I'm seeing that it's a very wide orb, okay? We could say Mars trines your ascendant and an 8-degree orb. Usually, 8 degrees, to use that as an orb in astrology, that's a very large orb. Mostly we're going to want to be focusing on the aspects in our chart, especially the ones that are at a 0-degree orb, the 1-degree orbs, the 2-degree orbs, the 3-degree orbs. Those guys are going to be the strongest things in our chart. Then if something significant is popping up in the 4-degree orb, 5-degree orbs, then we'll take a look. But something like an 8-degree orb, me as a person who is both a student of astrology and someone who works as an astrologer, I would pretty much never use an 8-degree orb to measure out an aspect unless it had something to do with the moon, but even then, maybe not. So we could say maybe some astrologers would say, yes, Mars is trining the ascendant. I'm going to say, not really. And it's a really weak trine when it comes down to it. That Mars sextiling Saturn at 4-degree orb is much stronger. And even then, a sextile is a mid-range aspect. It's not a major aspect. Now, if Mars was, you know, squaring Saturn, opposing Saturn, conjuncting Saturn, then I think they're going to have a bigger role. But because it's a sextile, and that's the only aspect that's really happening to your Mars, I'm wondering if you're almost experiencing your Mars in a way like some people would experience an unaspected planet. What is an unaspected planet? It's just as it sounds. It's a planet that does not make any major aspects in the chart. It's kind of lonesome. Now, we think of the planets in our chart like, let's say, actors on a stage. So the planets are the actors. The zodiac sign is sort of the clothes they're wearing. The house is the stage, the setup, and the aspect is what conversation they're having with the other planets. What script are they reading? So, some scripts between two planets are going to be a lot more heated. Some scripts between planets are going to be sweet and loving. It's funny because, like, it seems like none of your planets really want to have a script with your Mars. maybe Saturn. Saturn kind of has a couple lines with Mars, but not much. Now, in general, a Mars sextile Saturn, it's a good aspect for motivation. It's kind of a get shit done kind of aspect. But again, it's not as strong as, let's say, having, like, a Mars trine Saturn. And it's not to say you can't get shit done, but it could be an aspect where you call that in when you are trying to do something productive or get work done, things like that. Now, Mars in Pisces, unaspected in the fourth house, you know, it's kind of like, in this lifetime, you're just not, it's not to say you're not working on your Mars, but I would have to say that Mars is just not the most important character in your chart, right? We think of the characters in our chart, the most important characters, the main characters in our chart, those would be things like our star of destiny, which is the ruling planet of our sun sign. So for you, your sun is in Gemini, so your star of destiny is Mercury. Also, if my calculations are correct, your ruling planet is Saturn. So I would say Mercury and Saturn have some big roles in your chart. Mars, you know, this little Mars in Pisces, you know, it's not always just about being passive or calm, though. I think what you said, what did you say? I lost it. You said every astro website says that Mars and Pisces have a willow, calm, or submissive nature. So that doesn't have to be you. I would say that's a pretty one-sided view of Mars and Pisces. I think Mars and Pisces can be someone who does things with compassion, does things with others in mind, is relatively a forgiving person, but maybe once you take advantage of them one too many times, they kind of cut you off. but again, because your Mars is, you know, not technically, but maybe in my eyes, it's acting out as an unaspected planet. Sometimes it might be hard for you to access that Martian energy. So you may actually want to work with your Mars and Pisces a little bit closer, embrace it more. Just because it's at 28 degrees, I mean, yeah, that doesn't mean you're feeling that Mars and Aries necessarily. Actually, when I look at your chart, I see that your sun, interestingly, this your sun is conjunct Pallas Athena. And Pallas Athena is an asteroid. She's sort of like this warrior woman with fierce intelligence. She's the protector of the city. People with strong Pallas Athenas, sometimes they go into roles like the military or protection of the civilians in some way. Now, I don't know if you have any of those sort of jobs, but because Pallas Athena is so close to your sun, I'm going to think that you might have a lot of willpower to you. So I can see how you're a little bit frustrated with this Mars in Pisces, because you're saying, well, that's not me. I'm not passive. I'm not like this little flower child. I'm this fierce person who is able to make decisions for themselves, and I'm fiercely independent, and I'm not submissive to people. I tell them what I want. I don't know, that kind of, that attitude for me is kind of reading that sun and Pallas kind of sitting together. So it's interesting. And the last thing I wanted to say is that your Mars in Pisces is sitting in the fourth house. And the things in the 12th house and the fourth house, we tend to kind of keep secret. 12th house, we keep things secret from ourselves. Fourth house, we keep things secret from others. So it's possible that inside the home or around your family or around people who are really close to you, you present a much softer side of yourself, whereas in the public sphere, you know, you're presenting again as more of that fierce person with you know, Miss Independent, a lot of willpower and fire almost. So yeah, that's kind of my interpretation. No, I don't think you're actually a Mars in Aries. I'm sorry. I think that Mars is a planet that you gotta have to work hard to activate, because again, he's only making really one aspect in your chart, and even that one aspect is not a major aspect. So okay, and then my next question is, hey Mal, I love your podcast and the way you cover topics, and I'd like to make a quick request on a topic, house interception. I have Leo in my first, Virgo in my second and third, Pisces in my eighth, and I'm missing Libra and Aries. I don't have any planets in those houses. I'm bummed that I feel like I can't celebrate Libra season. LOL. Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. So that question like made me sad. I'm like, oh no, she thinks she doesn't have Libra in her chart. Okay. Let's see. So I'm looking at your chart. I'm going to call you missing Libra, which you're actually not missing Libra, by the way. So you're correct. You do have an inconjunct chart. You have an intercepted chart. So what is an intercepted chart? It's when an entire sign sort of sits between the 30 degrees of one sign, sits entirely in a house, Yet the cusp of that house is started by another sign. So let me put that a little bit more in English, because I don't think I completely said that the right way. So for instance, your third house, interestingly enough, it begins right at 29 degrees Virgo. And your fourth house starts at 1 degree Scorpio. And within the fourth house, we see between those two, we have Libra sandwiched right in the middle. So even though an astrology website is going to tell you your third house is ruled by Virgo, it is technically your third house is in Virgo, but the entire sign of Libra is still sitting right in there, as you can kind of see. And the same goes for across. If we go right across in your ninth house, Aries is still the vast majority of your ninth house. It's just intercepted, okay? And also, no Libra, I figured out that you actually do have a Libra placement. You have one of the asteroids in Libra. You have Vesta in Libra in the third house. So Vesta sometimes has to do with spirituality. It typically, in mythology, has to do with the monk or the priestess. And the fact that it's in Libra, I'm not quite sure what this means for you, because I don't know you. Do you at all connect with, being any kind of, I'm not saying you're a monk, but do you connect at all with, your spirituality or the spirituality of art? You may really appreciate painting, or also it could be the spirituality of the law. In some way, maybe you connect to this idea of karma or Buddhism. Maybe you have an interest in Buddhism. I don't know. These are things that are just kind of coming flying off my brain. I don't know if they're really ringing true for you. But regardless, yes, you do still have Libra in your chart. The sun in Libra will be transiting your third house all throughout Libra season. And also, we can also look, well, even though your third house is empty in Libra, well, who rules Libra? Venus. And where is Venus? Venus is sitting, oh wow, Venus is sitting right on your MC, very close to your MC, within 6 degrees. I'm wondering, are you an artist now? I'm seeing that even though you have nothing, like I said, you have nothing in your third house, but Venus is sitting very close to the MC, the midheaven, in the ninth house. So I would say Libra season is typically about you not only exploring the love of yourself and the love of other people, but also the love of other cultures. I would say in general, Libra season would be a great time for you to even take a short trip if somehow your life allows it. Taking a trip, even if it's just a staycation, you're staying overnight in the nearest city to you. Not saying that you have to fly to a different country or anything, although I think you would maybe get something out of that too. I think Libra season is for expanding your mind, finding connection with people that you wouldn't normally connect with. It's sort of this time for you to strike a conversation with a stranger in an art gallery or something, and you might see what you find. I don't know. So that's what I got for you. I hope that helped you guys in some way, and I want to answer more chart questions on Horoscope Witch. So that being said, I don't want overflowing DMs with chart questions right now, but maybe keep an eye out on Instagram in the future for me to post hey guys, send me your birth chart questions. I'm going to feature it on the next episode, and we can kind of do it that way. So keep an eye out on my Instagram stories in the future. Okay, so we talked about those birth charts. Now let's talk about the birth chart of Instagram. All right, guys, I'm back. So I was trying to think of like a celebrity or a famous person who's a Libra that we could kind of look at their chart and have a good time because it's Libra season. And, you know, the only celebrity that I could think of was like Kim Kardashian. And I was like, I really don't want to do that. And then, you know, I also thought about Oscar Wilde. The writer Oscar Wilde, and he's a Libra, and I think that he has written a lot of things like The Picture of Dorian Gray and The Importance of Becoming Earnest, and a lot of, I think, literature that has a lot to do with the theme of what Libra presents. But I think I might save my Oscar Wilde commentary for the next Artist's Way podcast. And then I was thinking, you know, I swear, I was like, Instagram. I was like, Instagram is like the perfect example of a Libra person in a weird way. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if Instagram was a Libra? And I literally looked it up, and Instagram was born on October 6th, 2010. In San Francisco, California. And I was thinking, like, I was trying to Google, I was doubting that anybody has like a time of birth for Instagram. So I don't exactly know what time exactly Instagram was launched, but I know it definitely was officially launched on October 6th. 2010. And I was kind of playing around with the time. Like, I made a chart for Instagram being born at 10 a.m. and I think that made Instagram a Scorpio rising, and I was like, that doesn't seem right. And then I made it to be at noon, and that still didn't seem right. And then I brought it back to, let's say Instagram was born on 8 a.m. And that finally kind of gave me a chart where I was like, I feel like this makes sense. So I guess the trademarked Mallory Horoscope Witch Instagram birth chart is October 6th, 2010 at 8 a.m., born in San Francisco, California. That's the chart that I'm looking at, and that's kind of the chart that I determined for Instagram. Now, if anybody else, you know, has done this in the past, I honestly don't know, or will do this in the future, they may have a different rising sign. But right now, I actually have Instagram as a Libra rising. So, which I actually think makes a lot of sense. And I'm going to post this chart on Instagram. So for sure, for real, if you're an astrology student, go and look at this chart while you're listening, and you can kind of follow along to what I'm saying. And if you're just purely here for my tranquil voice, you can just listen along, okay? Instagram has their sun in Libra. They are Libra rising. And they have their moon in Virgo, which I think is so poignant because, you know, if you think about Instagram as a whole, you know, I think of it, like I said, definitely a Libra, right? You know, there's a certain appreciation for art and aesthetics. The Instagram's birth chart, it's showing a person who has really actually maybe even like dedicated their life surrounding the image they are putting onto the world, which is really interesting, right? But when with that moon in Virgo, we also know that the energy of Instagram, you know, moon in Virgo can really be a tough placement. It can be a beautiful placement, but it can be a tough placement because, you know, moon in Virgo is so self-critical. We tend to, our inner critic tends to take over really, really easily. And I would say, anybody with a moon in Virgo, I mean, one of their life lessons, no matter how the moon is being aspected, one of their life lessons is, you know, getting a hold on that inner critic and taking the reins from the inner critic and putting the reins back in their hands. So it's interesting that Instagram, although they're a Libra sun and a Libra rising, again, really focused on that art, that aesthetic, that moon in Virgo in the 11th house seems to kind of be reading a lot like, what are people thinking of me, or am I good enough, especially in the 11th house, like, are my emotions acceptable for society? Am I going to be accepted, or am I going to be persecuted for my vulnerability? And kind of like a fear around criticism, which I think is really interesting, because what do when we go on Instagram? We do see a lot of things that are just like not real life, hashtag not real life. But then we also see a good amount of posts, at least, I have a personal Instagram and then I have Horoscope Witch. At least I spend most of my time when I'm on Instagram, I spend most of my time on Horoscope Witch because I just prefer my news feed on there because it's mostly like people, like other people, like witches or tarot readers or astrologers that I like to like read their posts. So it's actually kind of fun. But we see these posts that are a lot about, Instagram just isn't real, or like, let's be real. I went to Taco Bell today and went to Target and didn't have the perfect spiritual routine. Like, there is an attempt to be vulnerable or like really show who we are, but it's still through the lens of like, I'm sharing this to social media and this, is going to get likes or not get likes. And that to me is very Virgo moon, if you guys are picking up what I'm putting down. Now, going in, and anybody else who's interested in the rest of the chart, the Mercury is also in Libra, Venus in Scorpio, Mars in Scorpio. And what's interesting about this chart that I have up is that, the Sun, the Saturn, and the Mercury, all in Libra, are actually sitting in the 12th house. And I was like, oh yeah, I really think I found the right time. Because, things in the 12th house, they tend to be subconscious, they tend to be hidden. We tend to hide them from ourselves, and sometimes we need a little extra boost to live those things out. So the fact that Instagram has the Sun, their identity, Mercury, their thoughts and the way they're communicating with others, and Saturn, which is kind of our planet of like hard work, things that we're kind of here to do, things that we have to get done, all in the 12th house. I think there is a sense, if Instagram was a person, there would be a sense that this person was sort of hiding their true thoughts or true identity, having a lot of trouble expressing that, and needing to express it in ways in which they project onto others. Or, for instance, a sun in the 12th house, this is a really generalized statement, but it could be that, like, a sun in the 12th house, like, it could be a person who's always dreamed of being a singer, but they never really were able to express it in some way, but then they end up marrying a singer, and they end up, living through that other person. So, sun in the 12th house can be a lot about, like, finding our identities and being able to express our own true identity for who we are without having to live it out through another person. That's not everybody, that's just some things, and that's how I'm reading this in the Instagram chart. So yeah, it's interesting that, we say all the time, like, we don't see the real you on Instagram, or, we only see a little snippet of everybody's life. We don't actually see what's going on. That would be reflective of having Sun, Saturn, and Mercury in the 12th house. Oh yeah, and on top of that, Mercury is conjunct the Saturn. So Mercury and Saturn are sitting right on top of each other in the 12th house. And this can indicate, you know, we have Mercury conjunct Saturn. This can indicate a very internal person. A person like, you know, at a party, you know, everybody else is talking and having a good time and they're kind of like, they might catch themselves kind of like daydreaming or like having some really deep thoughts and not kind of being in the moment because they kind of feel very in their head. Mercury conjunct Saturn can also, depending on what else is going in the chart, but in general, Mercury and Saturn conjunct can indicate a more serious person, a person who's like serious about what they're accomplishing. We kind of see that in Instagram too. Like, we don't entirely know the thought process going on behind the people that are posting. We don't entirely know their motives. And there's also kind of a sense that, like, we don't know what's happening behind closed doors in their mind. Even if they're making a post that's sort of more like a diary entry and they're telling us what's going on in their heads, still, even that post is not entirely reflective of their daily life. Okay. Interestingly enough, Venus and Mars, I don't think they're quite conjunct. Oh, no, I lied. Venus and Mars are very much conjunct in the first house. So it's interesting that, like, you know, our identity kind of planets are kind of hidden in the 12th house, but then the way we present ourselves is in the first house. Venus could be like the way we interact with others, the things that we love. It can be about our relationships, but also our self-worth. And then Mars, the way we go about the world, our drive to get things accomplished and how we accomplish them. The fact that Mars and Venus are conjunct in the first house, it kind of means like this lifetime is about me. This lifetime is about me finding my own identity. But I think what Instagram in the chart has to be careful about is like finding identity through things that are outside of oneself. You know, searching for happiness outside of oneself. Venus in the first house can be very much like, I love me. I present myself in a way of, you know, being a certain way, whether that be, you know, I present the way I want to be perceived. That's how that's reading to me. But also Mars conjunct Venus in a chart. This can indicate that's like an artist aspect, right? And we can't deny that Instagram it was founded, or the original idea for Instagram was about making art and sharing it. It's not so much like that Facebook style kind of sharing, you know, what we're thinking in a status. We're more sharing the picture. It's like in Instagram, the picture comes first and the words come second. That's why I find, I'm such a big fan of Heidi Rose Robbins. If you don't follow her, you should. That's why I find the way she sets up her Instagram aesthetic. I like how you see the words first, and then there's like really the picture is the words, which is actually kind of like the antithesis of Instagram, but she makes it work. That is going back to that first house, Venus and Mars conjunction. We're kind of showing our art or our creation as our identity, and maybe our true selves. You know, that Mercury conjunct Saturn and the Sun in the 12th house is a little bit more hidden. Now, some other aspects we have in the Instagram birth chart. This is creepy, guys. We got Neptune conjunct Chiron, which I found interesting. And this can be, you know, Chiron is the asteroid, the wounded healer. So this can be a past life wound. And it can also be something that we're really good at, that we also have a lot of immense, like, self-criticism towards. So, you know, and then that Chiron conjunct Neptune, it could be that Instagram could be a place of spirituality, and I think there's a section of it that could be. There's a section of it that can be people really sharing their true stories. But then there's another section of Instagram that's not used in that way. It's used to, like, get likes, get validation. So I think this chart, like, we can see how this app goes both ways. But going back to why it's creepy, you know, guys, you know what Neptune rules? Neptune actually rules film and photography. And I thought it was so interesting that Neptune was conjunct Chiron. Like, who would have thought? Like, a wound, of course, this is only one way of interpreting it, but a wound surrounding photography. A wound, we're fixing our wounds through photography, for better or for worse. We're fixing our wounds through film. And we kind of see that taking place on Instagram, for better or for worse. Some of us may feel like posting a picture with no makeup on is very liberating, and it's a way of healing some you know, baggage surrounding, you know, women have to be attractive or whatever it may be. On the flip side, we could see someone with a super hot body who's trying to work out their wound surrounding self-worth with the amount of likes they're getting on that picture with the super hot body, yet that wound still exists, and those likes are not going to stitch up the wound, right? It's going to be like a Band-Aid. That Chiron Neptune. Again, that's a very one-sided interpretation of that. And of course, I'm being biased because I know I'm looking at Instagram's chart. But I'm thinking, like, oh, that is so interesting. And also that Chiron Neptune. You know, guys, I know that when I post on Instagram on Horoscope Witch with those astrology videos, you know, most of those astrology videos that I do without makeup on, and they get so many less views than when I post something when I have makeup on. And it does kind of blow my mind. It's like I'm giving the same message. You know, I'm still, like, channeling, like, what I would perceive as, like, information for anybody to consume who feels like they're vibing with what I'm saying or whatever. But it's interesting that, like, isn't that, I mean, but that's how it goes. And that's kind of something that I've faced in a way. Like, I know that if I post a video from the graveyard wearing no makeup talking about astrology, I know that it's going to get less likes. And, I know that I'm probably not going to gain any followers from it, but I've kind of been like, okay, that's okay. Like, if I happen to have makeup on and look cute, like, and I want to film a video, then sure. But I'm not going to wait for that moment to film the video, because I think regardless, you know, the people who are attracted to, like, my message are just going to be, that's going to be it, you know? And even if, you know, Horoscope Witch, let's say, like, the most followers I'm ever going to have is 500. I mean, let's say if those 500 people who are following it are the people in this lifetime that I'm somehow able to assist someone in that 500 group of 500 people, and you're somehow able to assist me in some way, beautiful, great. I don't need more than that. You know, like, we're so, you know, that Chiron in the chart, we're so obsessed with how we're being perceived. And that can also go hand in hand. I won't blab on about this chart for too long, but I just think it's really interesting to look at. You know, we've got Jupiter conjunct Uranus. So Jupiter conjunct Uranus in general, it can kind of be like the philosophers aspect. So, which is interesting because I don't go to Instagram and think like, Instagram is so philosophical, but yet there are people who join the platform who probably have something philosophical to say. But if you think about it, Jupiter, it can have to do with both Jupiter and Uranus could have something to do with spirituality in a way. Uranus is sort of like that higher thinking, that higher mind, and Jupiter can rule like philosophy, priesthood, our studies. So when they're conjunct, when they're really close to each other talking, Instagram is actually a person who likes to preach what they say and maybe doesn't love when people question their truth. Someone with Jupiter conjunct Uranus, they're going to have a very solidified version of the truth that they believe to be true, and they may not be open to hearing other people's side. And how many times do we see that on Instagram, right? People share their truth, they get hate comments, or whatever it may be. And on top of that, that conjunction, that Jupiter conjunct Uranus, is opposing the moon. So, you know, even though we're stating our truth in some way, when it's opposing the moon, we're kind of still searching for that emotional validation. Like, do I state my truth and do I get likes for it? And if I get likes for it, then I have worth. Then my self-worth goes up 10 points. So it's very, very, very interesting. I would say the biggest challenge aspect in the chart, or we would call it a focus. The focus aspect in the chart, I think, possibly would be Mercury square Pluto. And again, that also kind of goes in the same theme of like a Mercury square Pluto person. They don't want their thoughts controlled. They don't want other people, you know, influencing what they think, and they don't want other people to tell them what to think or what to do at times. I think Mercury square Pluto might have trouble with authority, you know, might have a shadow surrounding authority. So I think this might be that sensitivity on Instagram that we see too. Like, if I share my truth and someone doesn't agree with it, there's always this like, well, this is what's true for me. It may not be true for you, but it's true for me. Which I agree with, you know, like my truth is different than your truth or whatnot. But there could be a wound, you know, on Instagram as a collective surrounding people trying to control our thoughts and what we think, wanting to influence us. And we could feel that. We could get caught up in that. We could feel controlled by that in a weird way at times until we break free of that. So yeah, these are some things that are going on. Instagram was sort of my Libra person in a way for Libra season. But if you have any requests, I know Scorpio is coming up next, so I'm gonna have to decide on who is the chart of Scorpio we'll be looking at. Maybe it's gonna be a person, maybe it's gonna be a place. I don't know. We'll see what comes to me. Guys, thank you for listening. Just so you know, in my deepest, darkest moments, I will open the podcast and reread all of my reviews and feel like I'm doing something in the world. So if you would like to leave me a 5-star review, because you think I'm cute and you like this podcast, I'd really appreciate it because it really helps me out. Not so much about other people finding me, but if you want to share it with a friend, you can too, but it helps me out with my journey. And in those hanged man moments and in those justice moments, you know, I remember what you guys write on the reviews. So thank you guys so much. If you need me, my Instagram handle's in the show notes. If you need a reading from me, my Etsy link is in the show notes, and I will catch you guys next time for the next Artist's Way episode. So have a wonderful Libra season.